All right, so we are looking here at a passage which is about what you'd expect from an Old Testament prophet. It's doom and gloom. It's telling the people of Israel that they have strayed, that they have done wrong, that they have been misbehaving, they've been turning away from God, and that bad things lie in wait for them. So, what do we do with this? Surprisingly enough, my message is not going to be, or I hope it's not going to be particularly gloomy, but I do want to think about this passage. This is a time when the people of Israel were divided, and when the Assyrian Empire, it's the 8th century BC, was very much expanding, and the writing was on the wall. Well, not particularly in this context, but figuratively it was, that the Assyrians were going to come in and take over, and there wasn't going to be a great deal that they could do about it. And here we have the prophet Micah speaking out against the sins of his society. Okay. Why did I put that note there? It's all right. Okay. It's the wrong way around. That's why it is. Okay. Makes a difference anyway. Okay. So, I don't want to dwell too much on sort of the speaking against a thing. I don't want to. The obvious way to go with this would be to talk about things like, you know, what are the things we need to speak out against in our society, and what are we doing that needs to change in order to be God's people. I'm going to do that a bit. I'm going to start with that. There's a much bigger message, I think, behind this that I want to get onto. But to start off with, sure, this is Micah speaking to his society, pointing out the many things it's doing that are wrong. And I think that taking it straight off the page, there is a lot there that we need to reflect on. Should we see ourselves a bit like Micah? Is it our job to respond to this by saying, you know what, I need to speak out. There are things that I need to say to my community, to my country, to the world, that need to be said, and that I feel in some way that God is calling me to say them. Perhaps others of you will read this passage and feel that you are a little bit like the Jewish society being described in the passage, that actually there are things that you know that are going on in your life, or the way you think, or the way you act, that are not in keeping with God's teaching. And so one way or the other, we can respond to the passage in two ways. Do we need to speak out, or perhaps do we need to pay more attention to other people speaking out and reflect on what their words mean for our lives? When I read through, perhaps the passage that resonated with me and made me sort of wince a little bit was Micah 3:5, this one. And this is what the Lord says: as for the prophets who lead my people astray, if one feeds them, they proclaim peace. And if he does not, they prepare to wage war against him. We're very comfortable. We have the things we need. Is that where our impulse for peace comes from? And I've often thought, if we took those comforts away, would our desire for peace be quite as strong as it might be when we have all the things that we need? There are things in this book that do speak to us in our situation without much translation from the 8th century BC through to the 21st century AD. But I don't want to dwell on that. That's not where I want to go, because there is something wonderful about this passage. There's something really positive, and it's not something that is immediately obvious from reading it, because the meaning of the passage is it is a rebuke, it is a criticism of society. And this is that it works. Normally, the Old Testament prophets get no reception at all, or they get executed. Micah doesn't. And I want to read a little bit from the book of Jeremiah, which bears upon this, because Jeremiah is a little bit similar. Here is someone who speaks against a similar set of social problems among the Jewish people, and this is what they say to him. This is what they say to Jeremiah. This is how he is received. The priests and the prophets And all the people heard Jeremiah speak these words at the house of the Lord. But as soon as Jeremiah finished telling all the people everything the Lord had commanded him to say, the priests, the prophets, and all the people seized him and said, "You must die. Why do you prophesy in the Lord's name that this house will be like Shiloh, and this city will be desolate and deserted?" And all the people crowded around Jeremiah in the house of the Lord. When the officials of Judah heard about these things, they went up from the royal palace to the house of the Lord and took their places at the entrance of the new gate of the Lord's house. Then the new priests and the prophets said to the officials and to all the people, "This man should be sentenced to death because he has prophesied against this city. You have heard it with your own ears." This is how Old Testament prophets get received. The Lord tells them to speak the truth. They speak the truth. That's what happens. It's not a very different process when Jesus spoke out all those years later, calling things out that were true, telling people to do horrendous things to each other, like love one another, and so they did the most obvious thing, they killed him. But it doesn't happen to Micah. And in fact, Jeremiah's comeback is very interesting. He wrote... this is some of the elders of the land, not Jeremiah. So the elders of the land stepped forward and said to the entire assembly of the people, "Micah prophesied in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah. He told all the people of Judah that, this is what the Lord Almighty says, Zion will be ploughed like a field. Jerusalem will become a heap of rubble. The temple hill, a mound, overgrown with thickets. Did Hezekiah, king of Judah, or anyone else in Judah put him to death? Did not Hezekiah fear the Lord and seek his favor? And did not the Lord relent so that he did not bring disaster he pronounced against them? We're about to bring a terrible disaster on ourselves." So this passage, yes, it comes across as incredibly heavy, if you like, but it's wonderful. This is someone saying to society, look, this is what's going on. And this is a society who had people willing to speak out and to lead and to say, yes, we are doing these three things wrong. We are prepared to recognize that that is what is going on. And crucially, we are then prepared to change. Because when God pronounces doom on the people, he doesn't want to hurt them. They're his children. He's telling them this. He's showing them what might happen. He's like the ghost of Christmas still to come in Christmas Carol. The whole point of Christmas Carol is not to persecute Scrooge. The point of Christmas Carol is to show him the meaning of his actions so that he can then be a great deal more, in that case, more fulfilled, happy, helpful member of society. That's Scrooge. In this case, though, it's very similar. God is saying, look, this is what's going on. Look at yourself in the mirror. Think about where the actions are leading. It's a story of tremendous hope for me in many respects. It's a positive message. And I want to go through that positivity in a fair amount of detail. This is not just an Old Testament thing that we need to think about now. I'm a historian. I'm going to do the history bit now. I'm sorry. I know that I do this, but it's what I do. And I'm a medieval historian, so that's where it's all going to come from. It is not lost on Jeremiah that Micah prophesied, people listened, society changed for the better. That's why the elders pointed out Micah didn't just change society for his own generation. He created an example that was used by a later generation with Jeremiah. And likewise in my period, people like Micah, people like Jeremiah, they inspired church leaders throughout history. When they saw persecution or bad things happening, they were able to draw upon these examples and say, look, there are things in our society that need to change, that need to be reformed, that aren't good enough. They are not in keeping with God's kingdom. And in many cases, they got their heads chopped off. But in many cases, they didn't. It's not an easy business being a prophet. But it isn't a role that has no purpose or no hope. It's not just saying, doom's coming, doom then arrives, see, I told you so. It's a hopeful message. So, my first example, you may have heard of the Emperor Charlemagne. Very powerful emperor, reunited much of Western Europe in the 700s AD, became emperor on Christmas Day, 800 AD, and built this colossal empire in the image of the now fallen Roman Empire. And he had a son, and that son's name was Louis. And Louis didn't inherit the abilities of his father, but he was a very pious man, which is why he was known as Louis the Pious. And here's the thing. There was a point about 10 or so years after Charlemagne's death when Charlemagne's empire was on the verge of civil war. Various factions were deeply discontented with Louis. They didn't like the direction the empire was taking. They could see the empire's interests and its policies beginning to fall apart. And so the church called this out to Louis. They pointed out what was going on. And so Louis called an assembly of his barons and apologized publicly to all of them. War averted. I'll take my next example from another Louis, 8 Louis later, in the 13th century. There's a king called King Louis the Ninth. Again, he went through a series of major failures in the sort of early to mid part of his reign. And again, the church said, look, you have failed. This is unambiguous. Things have to change. You have to do things differently to the way you did things previously. And so what Louis did was to put in a series of reforms to the justice system and to the bureaucratic system in the Kingdom of France, which were to lay the foundations for about 3 or 4 centuries of sustained growth from that point, including the better administration of justice, the better administration of society. Now, you may be thinking, well, what have all these examples got to do with the Old Testament prophets? It's the same thing. It's what we're called to do as Christians. It's calling out to our leaders, to our communities, when we see something wrong, when we see something that isn't working. Yes, sometimes it's not well received, but sometimes it works. And I could give you a lot more examples of this. And it goes all the way back through the history of Christian Europe and other Christian societies, but all the way back to the Old Testament as well. So we're looking at a creative process here. It's something that's good for society. It's something that we need to do. And this then brings me on to the trickiest part of my sermon, which is, okay, guys, how do we rebuke people? Because everyone loves being told that they're doing things wrong. They love it when Christians call them out and say, you're sinning. And they go, I'm so glad you told me. Of course they don't. It's a very difficult environment in which for Christians to speak out about anything as Christians. Now, there are certain things that we can do which are reasonably safe, and there are things that are both safe and important. It's not particularly controversial for Christians to say that we need to do a better job as stewards of the planet, looking after animal species, reducing pollution. These things aren't controversial. They are hugely important, but they are not controversial. But there are many other areas where for a Christian to speak out would be to immediately get shot down. Because there's the old, I've never actually seen a Christian do this, but there is the stereotype of sort of the hard-line Christian who goes around telling everyone that they're sinners, they're going to hell, and if they don't repent, all sorts of horrible things are going to happen to them, probably involving boils. This is the stereotype, and it's a stereotype that is repeated back to me time and time again, even though I've never actually seen a Christian do it. But then how do we speak in this environment, and what can Micah tell us about this? How can we see something in Micah that is useful? If we see something in the world around us that we want to call out, the most difficult thing is to say, okay, I want to speak out about this, but how? I remember Mike Fagredo many years ago, and it stuck with me, saying that as Christians we are called upon to rebuke, which is a word that in this society just sounds awful, but it is in the Bible. We are called upon to point these things out, but that we are extraordinarily bad at it. And I think that the reason is because we strongly suspect that as soon as we open our mouths, we will be shot down. And of course, even in the Old Testament, that's exactly what happened. It's what happened to Jeremiah until these elders pointed out that Micah should have been listened to. So what do we do? The thing I like about Micah, can we have verse 12 up, please? It's not a passage that immediately makes you think, wow, this is good. But it's the last one. So this is the sort of it's the end of the chapter. This is the punchline. Well, it's not very funny, but it's where it's all been heading to. Therefore, because of you, Zion will be ploughed like a field. Jerusalem will become a heap of rubble. The Temple Hill a mound of overgrown with thickets. Now, I don't have an answer for you. I don't know how to speak out in public about things that are going on with society. I've seen people try. The best one I've seen was Justin Welby when he became Archbishop of Canterbury, speaking out about those loans companies that want to charge you 1,700% interest so that you borrow 50p on one day. On day two, you owe the same amount of money as the GDP of Greece. And I fully supported that. I felt that he was doing the best he could. It was a topic on which there was a great deal of interest at the time. But even then I heard criticisms. What's a churchman got to do with our society? Go talk about God or something. So how do we do this? And the thing I like about Micah is that it does perhaps open a conversation on this for me. It does show me one way of going about doing this, which is he shows people in this passage, there are no individuals named. He doesn't pick anyone out. He picks out types of people in society, sure, but there's no one named. And his message is not hopeless. What he's not saying here is, you're going to hell, you're going to sin, all these horrible things are going to happen, there's nothing you can do about it. But you know what, guys? I'm all right. Let's celebrate that. He's not doing that. Yes, he points out what people are doing wrong. But he does it by leading that to where things are going. What he does is he holds up people's the consequences of their actions. It's like Christmas Carol. It's a very popular book. And yet the book itself is a book about rebuke. It's about rebuking Scrooge. But we don't feel that the book is judgmental and heavy particularly, because it's done in a particular way. And it's done in a very similar way to Micah. It's holding a mirror up to him saying, look, this is what you're doing. I'm not telling you anything more than what is already well known. This is what's happening. So let's sit down and think entirely logically about where that will lead to once you follow through the obvious steps that will follow from this. And like with Christmas Carol, Scrooge sees where he's going. He sees where his behaviour is leading because he's shown it. And then he changes. I'm not offering you this because I've got this sorted. I have never tried speaking out in public to denounce some great social evil, or not on any large scale. But in terms of my thinking about how we should go about doing that, how we can be prophets in society, I think Micah is a good example for a number of reasons. It worked. People were prepared to listen. But I think also just walking through with people, getting to see what they're doing and where it's leading them, perhaps that's the best thing we can do if we want to point something out, if we want to show that there is something that people need to address.